This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Back in on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN, and joining me now, as he does every single Thursday, right here at 6 o'clock, that's Kyren Samuels from Sports Illustrated College Football and NFL for them. Kai, how's it going, man?
It's going good, man. Happy to be back talking some ball with you.
Yeah, real quick, off the top, these NBA playoffs, I talked about this off the top of my show. Is this the best start to round two of our lifetime? Like when it comes to just the competition of these games, this has been fun as hell to watch.
Absolutely. I mean, especially to me, I wasn't the most enamored with round one.
Right.
So to have that kind of 180 from these games, it's been incredible for me, especially like, you know, my guys out, my team's out, LeBron's out, and I'm just watching as a bystander. I'm just getting to enjoy the games for what they are, right? No
agendas,
nothing involved. And this has been amazing to watch. I mean, these games are coming down to the wire. You know, we can talk about the Boston Celtics that have had two historic collapses.
Right.
It's never happened before. It's on a back-to-back 20-point losses being blown has never happened in the history of the NBA. So we're actually witnessing some historic stuff go down here. And it's just been pretty amazing to watch it. Even the Aaron Gordon buzzer beater from the other night.
Oh, yeah.
The Nuggets. Over the OKC, that was incredible. So I'm enjoying the games, man.
Yeah, I like having something that is compelling while we're in the off season for football. That's always nice. Now, what did you make of the news we got yesterday? President Trump is starting a college athletics commission, and I'll get to the co-founders in a second and ask you about Nick Saban and Cody Campbell, the Texas Tech NIL collective founder, because that looks like who the co-chairs are going to be. But what did you make of that announcement?
You know, it's interesting. I think the timing of it all is pretty interesting. You talk about, we get to Saban in a while, but, you know, the impetus to push it at this point with the people that are going to be, you know, kind of spearheading the movement, I find this all very confusing. I don't know where it's heading. I'm not 100% opposed to it. I know a lot of people
Right. Just,
you know, they hear anything about it and they're just opposed to it. And I think that we need some type of, you know, delegation in terms of people that know the sport, know intercollegiate athletics and how it operates, they should have some type of committee, some type of oversight, some type of, you know, guidance for the general collegiate direction. But at the same time, it's going to be hard to keep hands out of the pot that don't need to be there.
Right.
Some, like the oil billionaire that we're going to talk about in a second.
Yeah.
It's just a little bit confusing. If we're going to be having some guidelines for the college kids and for the college coaches and everybody that's involved with intercollegiate athletics, then we probably should keep it within that realm.
Yeah. To me, it just feels like grandstanding. We know that the president likes to be popular with people. So that's what I think this mostly is. But one thing they did get right, Nick Saban, if you're creating a commission or an oversight committee, whatever entity, you know, it is that is going to look over college football and college athletics, Nick Saban is a good name. That gave me a little bit of positivity. And I also think, you know, in general, we have talked about how we actually make the changes we need to NIL, to transfer portal, all these things. It's going to have to, and you know, maybe employer-employee relationship, it's going to have to go through the federal government. It feels like this is at least a start to that, a start to federal government intervention.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Like you said, to me, it does feel like a little bit of grandstanding, because what actually does the quote-unquote study mean? Like, what does
right.
that entail? Is that going to set up, you know, maybe a set of guidelines for the NCAA and the players and the coaches to follow? Is that going to set up an oversight committee
yeah.
that's going to oversee the day-to-day?
And you know, how much power are they going to have? That's something we don't know. We're unclear on right now.
100%. But I do think that I'm in 100% agreement with you that if we are going to have somebody to spearhead the movement, Nick Saban is the guy. I mean, a couple of years ago, everybody was complaining about his speech at SEC Media Days when he talked about the haves and the have-nots. And then you look at 2 years later, everybody's complaining about NIL and everything, acting like it's coming out of left field, when he was one of the guys that was ahead of it and really saw what was coming, asking, is this what we really want our sport to be? And now we're kind of seeing that spearheaded with this movement. And also, I think, you know, it's kind of gone under the radar a little bit with this situation, but they've also, with the NCAA and the settlement
yeah.
that's going on, they're kind of waiving the rights for the TV deals, which kind of almost get, outside money, basically third-party money, to come in and fund some of these teams. And if that is going to be the case, this might just be the tip of the iceberg for where we're going with NIL and as far as the potential forming of that Super League that we talked about during the college football playoff when we were talking about the selection show. We are going fast towards that now. And I think it's kind of going under the radar because people hear a name like Saban and Donald Trump and kind of black out and focus on those two. When the bigger picture here is that we're heading for maybe an irreparable change to college football.
Yes, 100%. We've been headed this direction for a minute now. Now, a little bit earlier, if I was reading your tone right, you take a little bit of exception to the other co-chair or co-commissioner of this commission, Cody Campbell, just an oil money guy, $4.1 billion. He sold his company Double Eagle for, and that's oil and natural gas. Like, did I sense that you have a bit of a problem with this?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, when you talk about people with vested interests, like, he is the guy that will have the most vested interests. I know when people hear the name Nick Saban, they immediately draw parallels to Alabama and the SEC and feel like, oh, this is, you know, Nick Saban crying about the SEC and parity and all that. But that's the furthest thing from the truth. When he was one of the guys that said from the beginning, it's about the haves and the have-nots, and it's going to create an imbalance within the sport that nobody can sustain outside of the, you know, 5 to 10 teams that have historically had the funds to do so. But when you have a guy like this who's invested heavily into Texas Tech in
right.
the fund, and if people have paid any attention, and I know they're not the sexiest name in college football, but they just built a state-of-the-art new facility at that place that rivals any school in the
yeah, America. And they have crazy money right now running through that NIL collective for people that aren't paying attention.
100%. And if you're paying attention to the recruiting rankings, they just have one of the most impressive portal classes within the open portal era. So they are not only, you know, putting their money where their mouth is with the facilities, they are starting to see some of the results of that and getting players involved. So to me, to have an active person that is heavily
right.
involved in the money of a school like Texas Tech, which is in a major conference in the Big 12 that has an automatic qualifier spot to the college football playoff, it feels a little bit different.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about a guy that has such money and power and influence currently within a program, having that vested interest and maybe potentially a say for a team that could, you know, jumping the gun a little bit here, but they could be in a playoff race in a year or two or in a couple of years when the benefits from all this investment start to happen. And you have a guy like that that's sitting on a committee or a board or an oversight chair. We don't know what his role officially would be, but it does feel like a little bit of a double standard in the vested interest there.
Yeah, conflict of interest where he could line the pockets of Texas Tech and schools like it. Yeah, I completely understand that. That makes a whole lot of sense. All right, now, did you see Urban Meyer on his podcast, The Triple Option? This is making the waves today. He was talking about Michigan and Sharon Moore and his suspension for games 3 and 4 of this upcoming season. And he said that if you lie to the NCAA, your career should be over in college football. It was really a shot at Jim Harbaugh and Sharon Moore. But Kyron, I, without being the master of the obvious, Urban Meyer acting in any way like Mr. Morality is just laughable. Come on, man. And he has lied on multiple occasions, whether it's the NCAA or his wife. You know, he is a serial liar. So for him to be the messenger to deliver that message, just, it's laughable.
Yeah, it's also pretty funny. I mean, you talk about a lot of people who have accused, you know, Harbaugh of running from sanctions and going to the NFL. When a lot of people kind of accused Urban Meyer of that same situation.
Yes.
At Florida, when they were going through all that, and, you know, after the Alabama loss in the SEC championship game, you know, it was masked under health conditions. But then we saw him accept the job, you know, a year and a half, a little bit less than 2 years later, to go to Ohio State and reinvigorate and restart his career with kind of a new spotlight on him, with a new set of eyes on him. So I did find that a little bit funny that he was the guy, and I 100% agree with you, man. If there's anybody that, you know, we all respect and we love him as a football mind that hasn't had a squeaky clean pass, it's Urban Meyer. He's right message may be wrong guy to deliver that.
Yeah, and the other thing, like, you remember the Zach Smith situation? Wide receiver coach, yeah, before, I mean, Brian Hartline. Like, what, brother, you got caught lying. You said you didn't know about the domestic assault, and you had messages and emails that were confiscated that showed that you knew about it, and you got suspended for that. So you lied amid that investigation. It's like, come on, man. You know, it's just, it's insane. It's insane. But Urban is one of a kind. We know that. Now, I've been having ongoing conversations with a lot of people around college football that cover college football about the quarterback crop going into next year. And, you know, I think that there is some talented guys. You know, Cade Klubnik has some experience. We know Garrett Nussmeier has some experience. Lenore Sellers could be fun at South Carolina. But when you look around the country at some of the best programs, Georgia, Ohio State, Oregon with Dante Moore, it feels like this crop of quarterbacks is unproven, right? So how do you feel about the quarterback crop we're going to see next year in college football? Do you think it's a down year, or do you think it's sort of a wait-and-see type approach we should have?
I'm always the wait-and-see type of guy. I mean, especially when you talk about the quarterback position, so much can change from year to year. You know, let's use Jalen Milroe for an example. He's a guy that after, you know, the 2023 season where he led Alabama to the SEC championship game, you know, they had the Rose Bowl where he performed, you know, solidly and had a chance to win that game to go to a national title game, broke a ton of records and everything. We kind of expected him to make a leap where he could potentially be the number one quarterback in the draft if all things goes well. And we were on that path after the Georgia game. It really looked like he had made that step, and he was going to round out his game. And then you get to the rest of the season, and it plays out. And, you know, the Vanderbilt game happens, and he played solid that game, but had a couple of mistakes that end up costing him big. And then you get to the Texas game, the Tennessee game, and then the Oklahoma game after that, and everything kind of unravels, and you see his stock go from a guy we're talking about top of the draft to a guy that, you know, we talk about that went in third round. So I'm a believer in some of these guys. I really like their talent level, but I do feel like it's being, you know, propped up to kind of counteract for the quote-unquote lack of success and the lack of, you know, enthralling prospects that we had last season. Whether you're talking about NFL or college level, I think just the names that you're going to hear this season are a little bit more exciting. You talk about the Arch Manning.
Sure.
Talk about some of the guys like Drew Aller who have all the tools in the world, right, that aren't really realized yet. Even a guy like Lenore Sellers, who I think is pretty funny, where he's one of, you know, the draft community, at least. He's one of the darlings right now, but people just came off of a Milroe hate train, which is just funny to me, a guy's similar
right.
skill set. Kind of have the different, you know, viewpoints. And the same thing for McKay Klubnik, who I'm a big fan of, and a guy like Shedeur Sanders. To me, they're very similar in the aspect that they're comfortable pocket passers that don't have ridiculously good size. They deliver the ball accurate. They don't have the strongest arms, but they have a lot of the same tools. And you see what Sanders just went through in terms of what he was criticized for his profile. And then we have McKay Klubnik, who I see on the ESPN mock that went number one overall in that mock draft, which is funny doing mock drafts at this point in the season.
Right, but, of course.
It's just the different viewpoints that you have from those guys. So I think that this class is a little bit propped up to kind of balance out what we got last year. But I do think that there's something to like with these guys. There's a lot of tools that we're going to see with these guys. If they can be developed and they can round out into some of the decision-making for some of these guys, start to round out, we could have some very intriguing college prospects and NFL prospects from these guys going forward. But like you said, they're all unproven to me outside of Cade Klubnik and Garrett Nussmeier. Those are the two guys,
right,
in my opinion, that have solidified themselves at the collegiate level at minimum. We know what they are at the collegiate level at least. The rest of these guys have a long way to go. Even Drew Aller, to me, coming off of a college football playoff semifinal, I still think he has a lot to prove as an individual, especially if we throw in the NFL caveat in there.
Who are some guys that you think will shine at the quarterback position in college football that we're not talking about? I know John Mateer at Oklahoma is a fun one for a lot of people to talk about. Yeah, one I brought up yesterday, just to get the ball rolling on this for you, Dante Moore at Oregon, anybody? You know, I've yet to see in the Dan Lanning, Will Stein sort of era there a quarterback struggle, regardless of, you know, experience and everything else. We know Bo Nix, when he was taken in, he was, you know, it was kind of laughed at to a certain extent because he hadn't been that good at Auburn, but of course he thrives. Dylan Gabriel, of course, had experience and he was good, but he thrived. Dante Moore is an interesting one that I'm going to be watching next year.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Dante Moore. I thought he was an extremely talented prospect coming out of Michigan. It was a big deal that he made it out of Michigan to go to a school like UCLA when he originally signed out of high school to go play for Chip Kelly. So I thought he showed a lot of promise when he started with Chip Kelly. I don't think the styles necessarily matched up. Dante
right.
is more of a pure pocket passer that has to me, when you talk about just gifted throwing the football, he's as gifted as anybody in the last two draft classes, just throwing the football.
Yeah.
He has a lot that he needs to grow in terms of developing upstairs, in terms of decision-making and you know, nuance within the pocket, when to take off, when not, when to just throw the ball away, which to me is like the biggest learning curve that college quarterbacks have to make because they come from high school where they can just out-athlete everybody. And then some of them get to the collegiate level and they can just out-athlete everybody. But throwing the ball away is such a gift because you just go to the next down. And a guy like Shedeur Sanders had to learn that the hard way. I mean,
yep.
That's one of the biggest critiques of him in the draft. So I like Dante Moore a lot. But a guy that I'm still have – that I have a ton of faith in, I think Carson Beck set up for a monster
okay.
year in the ACC with Miami. I think he's a guy that people are forgetting about. Nobody's talking about him because he's been in the spotlight for so long. We saw him start two seasons at Georgia. But he set up for success. I mean, when you look at the Miami offensive line, Coach Mario Cristobal and Coach Mirabal, Alex Mirabal, the offensive line coach, everywhere they've been, they've had a fantastic offensive line. So you talk about protection, he's going to be protected. And then you look at the wide receiver core that they have. They went out and got C.J. Daniels, who was an All-American at the FCS level, at the G5 level for Liberty. Then he transferred to LSU, had a solid season, but dealt with injuries. And then he got a new start there at Miami. They have Josiah Trader, who's another really young, good guy. Keelan Maryland, Malachi Coney, who's a fantastic young freshman. I think that they're going to be set up for a monster season in the ACC. I think Miami and Clemson are going to be neck and neck there, fighting for the top of the conference there. And Carson Beck's going to have a monster year. You look at it from Cam Ward's perspective, it worked out great for him. You look at it for Dylan Gabriel, who transferred from Oklahoma to Oregon for one season. It worked out great for him. I think the more we get into this portal era, you're going to see these veteran quarterbacks go somewhere for their final year, maybe it's a fourth or fifth year, and have a lot of success. And I think Carson Beck's going to be the next in the line for those type of quarterbacks.
Yeah, and hopefully, you know, he's looking to get his NFL draft prospect, his evaluations back up. So we'll see if he can do that this year. All right, now to 247 Sports. Brad Crawford at 247 Sports put out his early SEC power rankings. And I just want to let you know the top five and tell me if you'd make any changes. Texas at number one, LSU number two, Alabama number three, Georgia number four, and then at five, he has Oklahoma. Big believer in John Mateer. Would you change anything about that top five?
You know, I think right now that is a decent five. I don't know if I put Oklahoma at the fifth spot there, but to tell you the truth, I'm kind of drawing a blank on who I would put above them for that spot. I think there are a lot of teams with potential in the SEC this season, like a South Carolina. To me, has a ton
yeah.
of potential. A team like even a team like Vanderbilt. I think in year two, when you have Diego Pavia coming back, I think they could surprise people and have another solid season. I don't think a top five season, but I think there's a ton of teams from that 5 to 14 range that are going to be fighting for contention there. So. I like the top four of that order, though. I think Texas, to me, right now is the best set for success going into next season. And I think LSU, both question marks with those teams are going to be along the offensive line to me. Both teams lost at least three starters to the NFL. Texas lost four guys that are going to be in the NFL. So I'm really looking forward to see how they replace those trenches. But if they can figure out those offensive lines, I think they are both the most set at the receiver and the defensive back position to have a monster year in the SEC and beyond. Especially LSU. I think they're a sleeper this year in terms of the national title picture. If they can put it all together, I think they have all the ingredients of a national championship team. So I'm looking forward to seeing them. And then you have Alabama and Georgia, who are going to be there in the SEC race. As long as it's the NIL era and you can have all the recruiting rankings in the world, Alabama and Georgia are going to be up there. So they're going to be as talented as anybody with those staff and with that talent. So I'm looking for both of those teams to prove it this year, though. So as far as the top four there, I really like that top four.
Right.
And the next crop could be anybody. I probably would put South Carolina there myself just because they have more talent, in my opinion. They have more proven talent, I should say, than a team like Oklahoma. But I can see why people are all in on Oklahoma getting a guy like Jaden Knox to come play running back and John Mateer at quarterback. They have significantly upgraded those two positions.
He has Florida at number 8. Are Florida and the DJ Lagway experiences the biggest wild card for the SEC this year? I guess that's the way I'll put it. Are they the biggest wild card as to, you know, in regards to you know, teams that could really prove something, teams that could be top 3 in the SEC and really throw a wrench into things? Like, how do you feel about Florida?
I don't think they're the biggest wrench at all. I think they're probably one of the most easy-to-read teams. I think they're going to have a really good defense with that defensive line and some of those defensive backs. I think B.J. Lagway is a fantastic player. If we're talking about the 2027 draft class, I think he's the clear-cut quarterback one right now, and that's even if Arch Manning decides to come back. I believe in DJ Lagway's potential that much. But I think what you see is what you get with them. They're probably an 8-win team on paper in terms of talent that has one of the most difficult schedules you're ever going to see.
Sure.
I think their schedule is more difficult this year than it was last year.
Which is saying something. That's saying something.
Yeah, 100%. Which I think is funny. I think they're a little bit better team this year, but I think you can see a little bit of a regression record-wise. I think they could probably be 6-6 at the end of the season, even if they have improved and kind of closed the gap with some of those teams like the Georgia that they're going to have to play every year. So I think they're going to be a solid team. But the biggest team that could throw a monkey wrench into everything for me is Texas A&M. If you talk about talent in kind of year two going in with Mike Elko, if they can kind of erase some of those late-game mistakes that can come back to bite them in big games, primarily against Notre Dame, that could have changed their season last year, they could be right there at the top of the SEC when we get to the end of the season there, because they're going to get to play Texas. They're going to have those big home games. I think Texas A&M can really shock people.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you, Kyron. I agree with you. But we're at the point where it is death taxes and it's A&M as an SEC sleeper every single year. Now, I feel a lot more confident about Mike Elko than I did about Jimbo Fisher. That's not saying that much, but it's just every year. Do we have to do that same song and dance every single season?
I think what they were able to add to that team gives me hope for them, because their defense was drastically improved from what it was under Jimbo Fisher. And the offense, to me, was solid. It was rock solid. It wasn't great. It wasn't explosive consistently, but you knew what you were going to get. Another year under with Marcel Reed developing their quarterback.
Right.
You go out and get a guy like Casey Concepcion, that wide receiver who's one of the potential, he has first-round grades for some people already. That is a dynamic wide receiver from NC State. They got Mario Carver. They have some really good transfers. They got Amari Knoblack, who had a great freshman season for Alabama, and then, transferred to Texas, didn't really fit there. They have some talent. They have more talent than they have had on the offensive side of the football in a long time. And I think if that can match up and catch to the defense, we might have a situation where they finally put it together. And like you said, I believe in Elko and that staff. I love what Colin Klein was able to do with them. I think they're on the right path legitimately this time and not just going off the recruiting rankings,
right,
hype and money invested. I think they have made the right strides on the field to finally see some of that result happen for them in the SEC.
Talking with Kyron Samuels at Kyron Samuels on X, college football and NFL for Sports Illustrated. Now, to the NFL portion, just one big story I want to discuss, and it happened yesterday. The Cowboys were a little more than selectively aggressive. I thought this was an aggressive move. They traded for George Pickens, and the way the trade worked itself out, Dallas got George Pickens and a 2026 sixth-round pick for a 2026 third-round pick and a 2027 fifth-round pick. Let's start on the Cowboys side of things. Obviously, there's inherent risk to this. But when you look at these two wide receivers, CeeDee Lamb and George Pickens.
I'm Emma Greed, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
How dynamic do you think that offense can be. How much of a helper piece do you think George Pickens can be for that offense?
You know, I think it could be an explosive offense. I think the Cowboys, as long as Dak Prescott is healthy, and I'm not the biggest Prescott fan, I'm just going to be honest about that, but I would never deny his baseline level of play. He is baseline a top 12 quarterback, no matter how you slice it, even with the inopportune turnovers. I think he's going to be a guy that could get back to that 2023 level with this amount of talent around him. I think it's really going to be contingent upon the offensive line. You lose a guy like, you know, they're still recovering from losing Tyrus Smith 2 years ago, and now you lose Zach Martin, who had to retire because of those injuries. When you lose two players of that caliber, it's hard to just step in and replace those guys, but I think they're on the right path. And you have a Tyler Smith, who's a proven commodity at left tackle. Tyler Guyton, who they drafted last year, who's going to be going into year two, shows some promise. He's probably going to bump over the right tackle and start at that position. And then you draft Cooper Beebe last season at center and Tyler Booker this year at left guard from Alabama. I think they have the ingredients, although they're young. If they mesh well up front, I think it opens up everything for Dak Prescott in that offense, because when you add a guy like George Pickens, who's going to be a vertical threat, arguably the best vertical threat, at least the best 50-50 jump ball type threat in the NFL, it's going to open up everything for a guy like CeeDee Lamb, who can now get into the slot. He can play some of those mismatches against linebackers and some of those nickels that are going to be, you know, even though they may be shifty enough to keep up with them, they won't be physical enough to keep them off of them and get those guys some separation at that level. So I think it's going to be a great thing for that offense. You have two really good tight ends as well. I think they could be one of the better offenses in the NFL this year. Probably going to be a little bit of a running back by committee situation with Miles Sanders, and I believe they got Javonte Williams from the Denver Broncos as well. So they don't have necessarily a feature back, but we've seen in the NFL you can get it done with two or three guys that can spell the other and have you those situational third down back. So I think for Dak Prescott, getting a guy like George Pickens can be great if everything else goes
right
around them with the offensive line and the running back game. So I'm excited to watch them because I think they're going all in. I know a lot of people have talked about the George Pickens thing where, you know, nobody wants to trade for guys that Tomlin doesn't want anymore or what have you. But I think that for a team like the Dallas Cowboys, you have to go all in. You have to do everything you can do to win now because you're paying Dak all this money. It's only going to get worse every year from here on out. It's going to be harder and harder to build around them. You have to pay CeeDee Lamb. You have to pay Michael Parsons. There's some guys that are coming up here that are due for that team. You're going to have to pay Tyler Smith next year. They need to be going forward as much as they can right now. And also the division around them is only getting better. So they need to do this just to keep up from a competitive standpoint because the Eagles and the Commanders are going nowhere anytime soon. So I'm very interested to see what happens with the Cowboys because they are stepping in the right direction a little bit, which is a little bit weird to me to see that from, you know, that ownership at this point. I think they draft well, but I think they're making solid decisions so far this offseason.
But it does feel like the elephant in the room, no, when it comes to his sort of, you know, attitude and Mike Tomlin, you know, sending him off. Like, with Steelers, hotheads, we don't have a good track record of them playing well with their next stop. The recent one's Deontay Johnson, but let's go Martavis Bryant, Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell. Like, the track record is something that feels concerning, no?
Absolutely. I think the track record is concerning. However, I do think the difference between those and this guy is that you're getting George Pickens. He's still only 24 years old. He's still presumably getting to the peak of his career. I think those guys like Antonio Brown, the Le'Veon Bells, even Deontay Johnson, they had already saw their peak and they're the top of their performance level at the time that they parted ways with them. I think George Pickens is the opposite. I think he's still blossoming and developing into what he can be as a player. And I think that they have a serious veteran core there, especially with a guy like Dak Prescott and some of those guys along the offensive line. So like Tyler Smith, who's been there for 3 or 4 years now, who knows what it's like at the Dallas Cowboy culture. And you talk about Jake Ferguson at tight end. They have some players that can be there and be kind of a guiding light for a guy like Pickens. I think he's still blossoming into what he can be, and hopefully the Cowboys can get it out of him.
Yeah, and they also have an extension they have to deal with if he does play well. So that's going to be interesting to watch how Jerry and that organization handles it if he does have a good season. On the Steelers side, do you understand why they did this, or are you a little bit interested into their thought process?
You know, I'm only interested in their thought process because it comes on the heels of the DK Metcalf trade. Mm-hmm. It feels like they're trying to press the reset button, but everything prior to this would indicate that it's the opposite. So, you bring all your veteran guys back on defense. They're still in negotiation with T.J. Watt, apparently. And then you bring in a guy like DK Metcalf. It looked like they were going all in on a guy like Aaron Rodgers potentially coming in and having two dynamic threats of receiver, having, you know, a stable of decent running backs to build around, an improved offensive line, and that defense that we come to know and love the Steelers for. But kind of felt like they're not trying to press the reset button when you're clearing house with some of these guys. And it just kind of baffles me that, you know, this will come off the heels of the DK Metcalf trade. So very interesting to me. I'm kind of confused because I think they should press the reset button. They didn't take the quarterback until the sixth round with Will Howard, and I would presume to guess that he's not going to be the starter at any point this season. And if he is, it's going to be years off before he's actually, you know, developed into the guy that they would hope he would be. So I feel like they're at a serious crossroads, and they don't really know what direction they're trying to go in. So they're another team because I believe this is probably the worst roster Mike Tomlin has ever had right. as the head coach at the Pittsburgh Steelers. And if he can, you know, have a winning record or an even record with this team this year, I know people are tired of, you know, regular season success, but to me it would be one of the biggest feats of his coaching career to get this team to at or above 500 with the level of talent that they have in the division that they're playing in. I think it's going to be extremely tough for him to overcome this. So I am dead set on watching these guys play this season.
For sure. For sure. And we'll see who runs out there at quarterback. I guess they're still involved with Aaron Rodgers. But again, that's another we'll see. Kyron, I appreciate it, man. Thanks for joining. We'll do it again next week.
Appreciate you, man. Thank you.
Yes, sir. He is Kyron Samuels at Kyron Samuels on X. Make sure you go follow all of his work. Sports Illustrated. He covers college football and NFL for them. Now we need to go ahead and hop into the Blitz. When we return, President Trump has picked a couple of co-chairs for his new college athletics commission. We'll talk about that next.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now back to the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
It's a Thursday, so you need to start thinking about what you're going to be drinking on this weekend. I'll tell you what you're drinking on. Old Dominic. Go get a bottle of Old Dominic from your local liquor store. It's the most fresh, most full spirit you can buy in this city because the distillery for Old Dominic is right here on the riverfront in Memphis. 305 South Front Street is where you can find them. They have events all the time. You can go check those out at their website, olddominic.com. But Old Dominic has a bottle for you no matter what you drink on. Gin, vodka, toddy, bourbon, whiskey. They have four separate bottles of whiskey, and they're always innovating. So make sure you keep up with the new drops at olddominic.com. If you go also to the site, you can ship Old Dominic spirits anywhere in the United States of America. You can get them as a gift. And always remember that Old Dominic, official spirit of the Memphis Grizzlies, two bar locations inside FedEx Forum. So when you show up for a game, stop at one of those two bar locations for a craft cocktail made by Old Dominic. Old Dominic Distillery. Come say hi. All right, let's blitz.
Now, the biggest stories overloading the line. A bull rush of info. It's Gabe's Blitz on the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN, Memphis' sports station.
More news on President Trump's College Athletics Commission. According to multiple sources, Nick Saban and Texas Tech NIL Collective founder Cody Campbell are going to be co-chairs.
Yeah, and Cody Campbell is worth $4.1 billion. Yeah, with a B. $4.1 billion. He sold a natural gas and oil company here relatively recently, and he's really sort of devoted his life to Texas Tech and the collective and college athletics. So, you know, I still think, in a general sense, this commission is about grandstanding and being popular. But if you're going to go find a commission or voices that can make meaningful change, I think Nick Saban is certainly at the top of that list. So I like this pick. I think it makes a whole lot of sense. I think going into the future, regardless of what the entity overlooking college football is, I think Nick Saban needs to be a part of that. So I think this is a good decision for people in particular to lead this commission. I don't know how much power they're going to have. We've yet to see all that. It's not fully formed. But as picks come, Nick Saban is about as good as you can do.
Yeah, I feel like if you're going to have an NIL commission, Nick Saban being on it is the right way to go, being one of the co-chairs. I hope that they are able to figure something out. You know, you were talking to, with David Cobb about it just the other day, and I agree with pretty much everything that y'all said. I do think that there is a lot of political grandstanding happening here, but if they are able to get something done that is beneficial to college athletics, I'm going to be in favor of it, because this Wild Wild West era needs to come to an end, because it's not only hurting the universities and the colleges, but it's also hurting the student athletes.
Yeah, it's just an unwieldy, annoying process. And I think fans, even though we haven't stopped watching, I think fans are annoyed by the way things are going as well. So if they can figure something out, I'll be happy with that. I still think that it's more grandstanding than actual action, but we'll see how it all plays out.
Well, because the first step in all of this is going to be making them employees, and I'm just not sure if that's going to happen.
And I don't think Nick Saban wants to do that. I think he said that on multiple occasions. He doesn't want
to
become employees.
But that has to happen.
We still have a fundamental disagreement on both sides about being an employee versus not, and antitrust laws and antitrust exemptions. And it's like, that's a fundamental disagreement that's going to be, as we continue down this path, harder and harder to, you know, come to grips with, you know, because you're going to have 50% on one side, 50% on the other. And it's just, I don't know if that's going to get figured out anytime soon, even though that's where we have to go. It's just, you have some coaches like Nick Saban. I know Donald Trump has said it. You know, Ted Cruz, who's done a lot of stuff with this. They all do not want these players to be employees. But it's the only thing that makes sense. I just don't know how you get by without doing that.
Former Ohio State and Florida head coach Urban Meyer had a strong message for rule breakers on his podcast. Yes, for rule breakers. Yeah. Urban Meyer.
Yeah, yeah.
Rule breakers.
Mr. Moral.
Yes, yes. That's what he's known for, is his morals. His podcast is The Triple Option. He said, I don't believe it will happen, but if you need to put a rule in the rule book, if you lie to the NCAA, your career is over in college football. Once again, Urban Meyer.
Now, to be fair, he's talking about lying to the NCAA, not breaking the rules. If you're a rule breaker, you can stick around. But if you lie about breaking that rule, that's where you get kicked out. No, first of all, I think this is a stupid message. And I think it's even more ridiculous when you consider who the messenger is. Urban Meyer talking about lying to the NCAA? Now, maybe he was so stern with this because he was talking about Michigan and Sharon Moore and Jim Harbaugh. And he was the coach at Ohio State, and that was a rivalry. But, I mean, if you go back in Urban Meyer's career, he's lied on multiple occasions, man. Like, I just can't, I can't get with him here. Former Texas wide receiver B.J. Johnson claimed that then Notre Dame wide receivers coach Urban Meyer offered him a pay-for-play deal in an attempt to recruit him to the Irish. So let's go to that. We had the three-game suspension when he was at Ohio State for, remember, his wide receiver coach, Zach Smith? Domestic assault and domestic battery?
Mm-hmm.
And he genuinely lied about that. He said he had no idea it was going on behind the scenes. Then they had proof via emails and messages that he knew about it. So he genuinely, according to his rules, he should never coach in college again. You know, go back to the Jacksonville Jaguars thing. It was a toxic bullying environment. Josh Lambeau, the former kicker, sued him for that. Like, I just don't want to hear it from him. One, just because you lie to the NCAA, I don't think you should never coach again. But two, for Urban Meyer to get up there and do this holier-than-thou thing, now that he's not coaching anymore and he's just doing media, dude, come on. And also, you lied to your wife when you were the head coach of the Jags. You think we forgot about that? You stayed overnight in the state of Ohio and had a woman in your lap that was not your wife. So I just don't know where this guy gets off. This is absolutely insane to me that he had the gall to sit up there and act, you know, like he has morals. Like other people should be punished for the things that he did in the past. It's insane to me that Urban Meyer got up there on his podcast and said what he said.
It's an incredible lack of self-awareness to go out there and say things like this. There is a literal documentary about what it was like in the Florida Gators locker room and team.
31 arrests, by the way.
31 arrests, and this is the coach that's trying to tell us the morals of college football? Give me a break. It's just silly. It's just silly coming from Urban Meyer. It makes absolutely no sense coming from his mouth because we're like, hey, man, we have a mountain of evidence of you not only breaking the rules, but also lying about it.
Lying to your wife, to the NCAA, to your institutions? I mean, come on.
Clearly to
it.
Yourself a little bit?
Yeah, lying to yourself. It's just, come on, dude.
Silly.
Get over yourself.
Tom Brady had a message for Shedeur Sanders after the quarterback slid from an expected first-round NFL draft pick to having to wait until day three to be selected. Use it as motivation for what's to come next. Here's what he had to say. I actually texted Shedeur because I know him very well, Brady said in an appearance on the Impulsive Gross podcast.
Gross.
He said, dude, like whatever happens, wherever you go, that's your first day. Day two matters more than the draft. I was 199. So who can speak on it better than me? Like what that really means, use it as motivation. You're going to get your chances. Go take advantage of it.
He's right. And I don't think anybody in the history of the National Football League knows what it's like more than Tom Brady. Sixth round pick, 199, created a Hall of Fame first ballot career. He's the GOAT of quarterbacking and really players in the National Football League. I mean, this is a perfect message from the perfect person, as opposed to what we were just talking about, the wrong message from the wrong person with Urban Meyer. But I will say this, right? With all the reports of Tom Brady pulling strings behind the scenes in Las Vegas with the Raiders, why did he not, you know, get in the ear of Pete Carroll or anybody in that organization to draft Shedeur? If they're as tight as he acts like they are, why did they pass on him, you know, 6-7 times, 8 times in this NFL draft? But, you know, the message is fine. The message is fine to me.
Yeah, if you're going to get a message like this, it coming from the 100% GOAT, Tom Brady, who was also drafted 199, he's the perfect person to give this message to Shedeur Sanders. Is Shedeur Sanders going to turn out to be Tom Brady? No way. It's just not going to happen. I'm not sure we're ever going to really see a Tom Brady again in the NFL. You know, Patrick Mahomes is probably the closest that we're going to get for a while now. But I think that Shedeur Sanders has a chance to be a successful NFL quarterback, and having motivation and support from somebody like Tom Brady probably goes a long way. Yeah, I mean, you know, the Raiders were a team that we thought could be one of those dark horse teams for Shedeur Sanders. So
They have Geno Smith and then no plan after that.
That maybe they were saying, I don't know.
It's just weird. It's weird.
Unless Brady has his eyes on, like, trying to go after
Shedeur's
somebody else.
Wearing number 12 with the Cleveland Browns. Because of Tom Brady.
Did I see that Travis Hunter is also wearing number 12?
I think so.
With Jacksonville?
Yeah, he is.
Did you see that fake tweet out there that was like he's going to switch numbers on defense and offense every possession?
That'd be fun.
He's going to do 21 on defense and like 12 on offense?
I don't know.
Was that fake? I assumed it was fake when I saw it.
Can you even have duplicate numbers in the NFL? I know you can in college. Can you have duplicate numbers on offense and defense as long as they're not on the field at the same time? I don't know if you do that in the NFL. But, yeah, that's interesting. Shedeur, as a guy, as a player, now that he's just, you know, in the locker room, trying to, you know, pave his own way in the National Football League, I really do believe in the kid. I got to be honest with you. I know there's some people that are turned off by the arrogance and everything else. He's a really good processor of information. He is very accurate with the football. Like, to me, the neck up stuff for Shedeur Sanders, I feel like that's going to be a really solid thing for him at the National Football League level. And I think he'll get on the field as a starter at some point in his career, even though he was a fifth round pick.
Yeah, it's going to come down to, can he use this as motivation? I think he has the talent to get it done. I'm rooting for Shedeur Sanders. I hope that we look up in a couple of months when the NFL season starts. And I know that's going to be a while until he really is on the field. Right. But I hope that we're getting good reports that he's showing up and doing exactly what he needs to do for the Browns.
I just hate that situation.
It's just terrible
so
that he's
strange,
there. Right? If it was any other team, I would feel much better about
because
it.
Because at the same time, I just look at that quarterback room and there's five guys in it.
Right.
Right. And you have a couple of vets. But at the same time, on the other side of that, I look at that room and I'm like, why couldn't he start by week 4 or week 5?
Maybe he will. I mean, we talked about it. If they come out of the season, out of the gate,
bad.
Which people are going to start fully calling. Expecting
yeah,
that,
yeah,
by the way.
Which, yeah, hot take, probably going to happen. Cleveland yeah. Browns. You're going to have people calling for it. It's not like they're going to be like Dylan Gabriel. They're going to be saying Shedeur Sanders.
It is kind of crazy to see all of the people who sort of followed the draft closely and were getting intel from people within organizations. What we talked about the day after, that Monday after the draft, of once he fell out of day two, everybody was having the conversation about, is he just too much of a distraction to take at this point? If he wouldn't have gotten picked by the Browns, based on all the reports and the talks from inside all these facilities, people that are scouts and everything else, it seems like he would have potentially been an undrafted free agent because people were really against the distraction that he could potentially become.
Do you think he's going to get much run during the preseason?
Yeah, I would imagine. But again, they have five quarterbacks.
Right.
Deshaun Watson, I think. What are they going to do with him, by the way?
He can't play.
He's hurt.
Yeah.
But like, if he comes back, are they going to... Is he going to compete?
He was terrible.
He was terrible. I get that.
Before the injury. So it's not like he's going to be, he's going to probably be worse.
But like they in the preseason, I expect Shedeur to get run. You don't draft him in the fifth round if you don't give him.
Like, who's their starting quarterback right now?
Like Joe Flacco.
Is it Flacco?
But Flacco, Kenny Pickett, and Dylan Gabriel are going to be competing for reps in the preseason as well. So it's like there's just so many mouths to feed in that quarterback room. I want to see him get some run in the preseason, but there's five freaking guys.
Did you see the photo of Kenny Pickett holding a football next to Joe Flacco?
No.
Flacco holding a football.
Dude, tiny hands.
Tiny hands.
So Kenny his hands Pickett. Looked even smaller next to Joe Flacco.
Yeah. It was tough.
Yeah.
It was tough.
Yeah. That's why he wears gloves.
They didn't pick up his option, too, so.
Is he going to start?
Kenny Pickett?
Yeah.
I don't know. If I were the Browns, I'd probably.
It's Flacco, right?
Yeah, it's got to be Flacco.
Something about Flacco. I don't know, man. It's going to be interesting to watch, for sure. But again, with that quarterback room, don't be surprised if Shedeur Sanders is playing by week four or week five, if they have a bad start. Now let's go ahead and grab a break. When we come back, we'll wrap up this Thursday edition of the Gabe Kuhn Show with a rewind. That's next.